today. I'm willing to wait for them and to make sure that everybody who's attempting to connect has connected. Worth the wait.
In the meantime, I just have a housekeeping note. I did notice that there's a few people who have joined by audio only. We are unable to control the ability for audio only attendees to speak. So just remember, if you're on the phone only and you would like to be heard by us, please type *6 on your phone and it will unmute you. Everyone who signed in via the link should be fine, and you should be able to control your audio.
Has Bruce Quinn signed in yet?
No, he is one that was going to be a few minutes late, Linda.
Then we will rely on Robert for the roll call.
Here comes Kelly. You'll rely on me because it's gonna be easier since I'm
okay.
Virtual with you all.
Okay.
But I'll be prepared with that.
Okay.
And there's Colleen. Wonderful. I'll update you from a question mark, Colleen, to a board member.
I'm here. Welcome.
All right. So that's one more. And I see Kelly has entered. So just give me one more minute to finish updating names, Kim, and then we'll go ahead, because I think at that point we're going to have most of the... Kelly, are you here?
Yes,
he's here.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can, Kelly.
And Mary Parker checked in.
I need to check and see. Just 1 minute. I've got four more. There are quite a number of folks still trying to join.
Okay, we'll just wait. We'll just wait.
You know, it feels a lot like back in the day, my mom, her first job was a switchboard operator. And it occurs to me, doing this, just like when I'm teaching, it feels a whole lot like what that must have felt like back in the day. We've got two more that are in the process of joining.
Okay, no worries. Hey, Greg, can
yes.
you prop up a few more pillows in back of your head?
Okay.
We have the full frontal effect.
Hey, I'll do it even better. Who knows?
Hey, James, can you hear me?
Yes, Kelly, I can. Are you audio only?
Oh, no, it's me, Robert.
Robert. Okay.
Oh, much better. Very nice.
Better than what? There we go.
All right. Linda, I'm not seeing any more people right now. I will continue to watch the box carefully, but I believe you have all of the board members except for Bruce. So
okay. All right. Then I will call this meeting to order. And if you would begin the roll call, James.
Certainly. Robert Ballard.
Here.
Denise Bauer.
Here.
Lorna Brooks.
Here.
Janice Bryson. Janice, I believe, is in the theater. Robert, can you confirm that?
Yeah, she's here.
Janice Bryson is here. Colleen Byron.
Here.
Kelly Corsett.
I am here.
Voy Coy. I believe Dr. Coy is in the auditorium. Can you confirm, Robert?
He is here.
Very good. Tom Foster.
I'm here.
Bruce Gwynn. Okay. Bruce will be joining us later. Oh, you're here, Bruce? No. Okay, no Bruce. Sharon Holmbach.
Here.
John Lacey.
Here.
Tom Rose. I believe Tom is in the theater. Is that correct, Robert?
Yeah.
Okay, confirmed. Greg Scott.
Here.
Jim Snitzer. I believe Jim is in the theater as well. Is that right?
Here. Can you hear me?
Very good. Yes, sir. Michael Wade. Also in the theater. Is that correct?
Correct.
Very good. And finally, Linda Whitaker.
Here.
Okay.
We have a caller, so let's go right on to approval of the draft minutes of our last board meeting on August 14th. Do I have a motion to approve? A motion from anybody on the board.
I'll move to approve John Lacey.
Thank you, John.
Do I have a second?
Second. Greg Scott.
Any discussion? Any problems? Confusion with those minutes? Hearing none, then we will accept them as submitted. Okay. I'm going to read through, and this is on our agenda, calls to the public, but I have some additional comments to add. We shall change. Yes? Hello? Should I go on? I heard someone.
Yeah, go on, Linda.
Okay. We have changed some things to call to the public, actually more in favor of the public, in terms of a 5-minute time on the agenda allocated those people who want to speak to that particular issue. If something is not on the agenda, we will do this at the front end and acknowledge those people and give them 3 minutes. But we will ask that they identify themselves and then make their comments. If it is not an agenda, we'll double check these as we move along. If it is not on the agenda, but people want to talk about it, there'll be not a lot of discussion by the board. There won't be any discussion by the board, and then the staff will be directed to study it further and consider it at a later date. So I want to start to let's identify those who want to speak about the MOUs. You'll be given 5 minutes, and we will be discussing that right after number 8 on the agenda, but before the treasurer's report. I'm going to back up a minute. We're actually going to discuss this after number 10, you might want to identify yourselves in the chat so that we make sure you're heard. Make sure you have the 5 minutes. Robert Slack will be timing that. And the idea here is that we hear from either new voices, new points of view that we haven't heard before. Everybody was recorded before. All the previous comments have been recorded and are a matter of the record. But the idea is that we're looking for new information and points of view to what has been previously documented. The other thing is if you have something on the agenda that, or something that you want to discuss that is not on the agenda, 3-minute limit, and the time limits will be strictly observed. All letters and all comments, anything written, emails and otherwise, will be accepted as part of the record. We have already done that, and we continue to do that between meetings. Lastly, this is a forum for a civic discourse, and basic courtesies must be observed. So I know there are several people on staff parsing this out so that people are recognized in due order and that we don't skip over anyone. And so where do we stand regarding people who want to speak to items on the agenda? So those action items are not of particular interest. MOUs will be discussed after number 10, but there may be other things on the agenda that may be of general interest. So how is this parsing out?
Linda, would you like me to reflect back what I've heard and see if we have any comments right now?
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, what I heard from you is that any items that are not on the agenda, this is the time for anyone either here at the Heritage Center or virtually to speak up in the chat box and let us know what non-agendized item you would like to talk about for 3 minutes. Otherwise, we begin to proceed through the agenda. And right before each numbered agenda item, anyone who wishes to speak about that item should identify themselves to Robert in the theater or in the chat box online, and you'll be given up to 5 minutes to speak on any numbered agendized item.
Right. That is correct. Okay. Where do we stand at this point? We know that there are a number of people who want to speak to MOUs, and that will come into right before number 11. We are not going to separate anybody who wants to speak to the individual MOU is invited to address that at the front end of number 11. Does anybody have anything they want to talk about that is not on the agenda? And if so, identify themselves now and we will give you 3 minutes to do that. Anybody? Anybody in the auditorium? Anybody there?
Robert? There's no one in the chat box and I'm not hearing that anyone in the theater would like to talk about a non-agendized item. If so, Robert will speak up at this time.
This is Boy Boy. Explain again how the people want to speak about an item that's on the agenda.
We will, when that item comes up, we will call two people to speak about it and give that person 5 minutes. What we're looking for is something that hasn't been said before. But we will we'll call people at that time and recognize them in the order in which they are presented.
And they'll speak before there's a vote on whatever item that they're talking about.
That is correct. That is correct.
Thank you.
All right. I don't think we have anyone who wishes to speak about a non-agendized item, Linda.
Okay. Let's move on to some of the current events. I am going to simply say that this has been an unusual week, and due to an accident, really, of original timing, we had a finance committee and an executive committee this week, one right after the other. But those minutes, those draft minutes are now on the web, and I suggest that everyone take a look at them. There's a lot of important information there. And for the public and for our board members. So they're quick turnaround in minutes, they're up and they are posted. All right. I'm going to turn this over to James so that he can speak to the highlights regarding the executive director's report, leadership report, et cetera.
Thank you, Linda. The leadership report for this month was quite lengthy at 21 pages. That was distributed to all of you prior to the meeting earlier this week. The highlights that I'll hit are our upcoming American Alliance of Museums reaccreditation. We do have a deadline on October 31st to submit all of the materials for our self-study. Kim Bittrich and myself are the co-chairs of our reaccreditation committee because so much of it includes financial documents, as you might imagine, and because I have served for 10 years as a reaccreditation reviewer myself. We are on track to get everything submitted on time. As a reminder, at a board meeting last fall, I believe it was, the board voted that we should be brave and apply for a reaccreditation, not just for the Arizona History Museum, but also for the Arizona Heritage Center, the Pioneer Museum, and the Sanguinetti House Museum and Gardens. I just want to remind board members that the risk in that is that we are reviewed in an aggregated manner. So we are as strong as our weakest link. Sunset review and performance audit. We do still have two outstanding findings, one on the board side regarding oversight of a compliance issue, and of course the longstanding collections management issue on the staff side. I also want to note that Treasurer Snitzer's committee is looking at some of the findings that have been marked closed just to ensure ongoing compliance. And also to report that Linda it will be joined by Colleen Byron, and we will be reactivating the Sunset Review Task Force that was meeting every month or so, and we have a meeting scheduled in November for that. Strategic plan, we would really like to take some time with the board in January at that meeting to take a look at progress toward achieving strategic plan goals. As you might imagine, a worldwide pandemic and recession has thrown a monkey wrench into some of our plans, but not all. And from a 30,000 foot view, I would say that while it has hampered our ability to achieve some of our financial goals, the silver lining is that it has allowed us to really refocus our efforts on some of the goals that relate to AHS's core mission. And that, of course, is collecting, preserving, interpreting, and disseminating Arizona history. So we are making strides that we'll be prepared to talk about with regard to the goal of becoming the most trusted authority on Arizona history, and also progress in working with our certified historical institutions. There are a number of different formats and documents, six or seven actually, that we use for tracking strategic plan process or progress rather. So we'll be discussing that with the board in January. We'd like some feedback about that, about how we can make it as clear as possible. Thrilled to report that we have given the green light to reopen the Arizona History Museum and the Arizona Heritage Center. That occurred on October 13th, and that went off without a hitch. Our COVID-19 reopening plan, which is a four-phase plan, was reviewed this time by the Arizona Department of Health Services, as well as the governor's office, and both entities signed off on that. We have aggregated staff leadership goals for the fourth quarter of 2020, which I'll send out to the board following this meeting. That was an oversight that page accidentally got left out of your packet. With regard to finance, I really want to give a shout out to Treasurer Jim Snitzer and the incredible finance committee that Jim has pulled together. I think that's a detail that has kind of gotten lost in the hectic pace of the past few months, And I know some of them have joined us today, so I want to make sure that they're recognized. Not only Jim Snitzer, but Greg Scott, State Board Member from Santa Cruz County, is on the Finance Committee. They are joined by Deborah Bateman, an Executive Vice President with National Bank of Arizona here in the Valley. We have statewide representation on this committee, representing all of the communities where AHS has properties, including Dave Lyons, Executive Vice President and Southern Director for National Bank of Arizona in Tucson, Sean Morton, Director of Enterprise and Capital Management Technology for Bank of America, Sandy Navarrete, a Regional Sales Manager with National Bank in Yuma, and finally Jim Strait, Financial Advisor with Benefit and Financial Strategies in Flagstaff. So big shout out and thank you to them, because they've done a lot of that heavy meeting to be able to put together this agenda for you today. Finally, wrapping up, just a good note about fundraising. We have been reaching out to donors that we've not had contact with in a while, and I'm thrilled to report that that resulted in the renewal of a gift that we had not gotten last year from a family foundation in the amount of $10,000 unrestricted operating support, which is much needed and very encouraging. And then finally, on our support groups front, I'm going to give a big shout out to Deputy Director Bill Ponder, David Turpey, and Vanessa, who is on David's team. They put together a meeting with our Pathfinders support group in Tucson. From every report that I've gotten, it demonstrates that both the staff and the members of that board have renewed their commitment to achieving their mutual missions. There was a lot of appreciation expressed. The Pathfinders were very grateful for the presentation, and they heard a lot about exhibits that are coming up in Tucson. It was an opportunity to dispel an awful lot of rumors, and we continue to get good feedback about that meeting. Last but certainly not least, and I am looking for that page. I know that the board has been waiting for the long-delayed statewide employee satisfaction survey, and the results of that are out. You'll note the summary of that on pages 20 and 21, as well as a lengthy Appendix A. So both myself, Mel Davis, and Kim Bittrich, we were all went through a training to analyze the results. And so Kim and Bill and I are here to answer any questions you have about that survey or get any feedback you have, also about any of the other things that I reported. Thank you very much.
Can you give us just the highlights here? It was very much concerned a year ago when these employee evaluations came out. And now we have something to compare this year's with last year's. Could you please give us either the comparison or the fundamental findings here?
Certainly. As a researcher, I kind of tend to digest things in a very clinical way. So I'll give you the numbers, and then I'm going to rely on Bill and Kim, who have been with the agency for a long time, to sort of add a little qualitative feedback about that. So the our employee engagement number was higher than the state average this year by about 5%. Those of you who might remember last year, it was quite a bit below average. We did have 41 staff members on board when the survey was taken, which was the week, either the week of or the week before the board meeting in August. 38 people participated. Five of those employees have retired within the next 2 years. As a comparison, that's 13% of our workforce. That is absolutely equal to the average for all state employees. The state did deploy a new survey platform this year, which calculates an engagement percentage a little bit differently. The new system is called Qualtrics. the calculation for the engagement ratio, it focuses now on a percent of favorable responses. Last year, AHS's engagement ratio was a dismal 0.8%. This year, it has climbed to 5.1%. As a comparison, the overall engagement ratio for all state employees this year was 4.1%. So we're a full percentage point ahead. As an agency, AHS has had substantial improvement from last year to this year. All 14 categories last year were in the deep red, meaning the lowest color of positive responses. In the 2020 survey, 9 of those categories have moved into the very darkest green, meaning the highest color of positive responses. 2 are in the medium green, which is the second highest level. 2 are in the neutral zone, and 1 is in the red zone still. Most notably, the percentage increase in each category was dramatic. Even for the one still in the red zone, ranging from a positive percent increase of 13% on the low end to a positive percent increase of 34% on the high end. Thus, the average percentage increase over all 14 categories was 24.86%. I'll turn it over to Kim and Bill to add a little bit more context.
Thank you, James. This is Bill. When the survey came back in, aside from the numbers that James just went through, I think the things that I really tried to focus on were the narratives and the commentary that came back from the staff members who took the survey, and try to look at those in context with what we saw coming out of last year's surveys. And I think I was extremely pleased to see that there were a large, almost overwhelming number of very positive commentary that came out of the staff. The satisfaction levels with their work, with their work products, with their fellow employees, all of those were extremely high, which is a great trend to see, because what it says to me is that as a whole, the employees as a whole have embraced the goals and objectives and the strategies that have been put in place for the agency and to help the agency move forward. So that in and of itself was extremely positive to me.
Any comments?
Okay, Kim?
Yes. I agree with that.
As well,
can you hear me? Yes. Yeah. Yes. Sorry. As well as, I think the staff are a lot happier, and that comes across in their responses, that they're happier with their job and with the agency and how things are going within the agency. And you can see that in the day-to-day operations as well.
We could also discuss this maybe at the executive committee, but I understand that there was an opportunity to poll staff in terms of their own perception of function of the board, function of support groups, chapters, and so forth. Do you have some general observations about that, and should the board review those?
Well, Linda, I want Bill to weigh in too, because, you know, he is our designated HR liaison with ADOA State HR, and they'll advise us as to what and how much of that should be released publicly. But generally speaking, just a point of clarification, the questions were very broad and open-ended, and they did not ask specifically about any one aspect of the organization at all. On the contrary, a lot of, and I'm sorry if I'm lapsing into researcher speak, but it's what I do and I teach it. So the issue that I have with the survey itself is that it's 14 quantitative questions only, and that there are, by HR's own admission, many variables in each of those questions. So we just asked four questions designed to get a little bit more free text, qualitative responses to expand on some of the questions that are asked every year. And yes, I do feel, to the extent that we are given a green light to release some of that to the executive committee, that should be done.
Okay. Anything else to add to that, Bill or Kim?
No, I would agree with what James said. I think we're looking just exactly how much of that we can be allowed to release. I think the qualitative questions as presented, you know, there's no surveys that were taken that were obviously 100% in the positive, and so there were some levels of concerns that some members of the staff expressed. You know, I think by and large, many of those concerns had to do with the relationship with the state board and with the chapter boards or annual support groups. And so I think once we get a sense of how much of that information we're allowed to provide for the board or the executive committee, then we'll be happy to do that.
Yeah, do you want to add, James, to your report?
Yes, the most important thing of all that I meant to do at the very beginning of my report, which is to give a warm welcome to our three new board members, all of whom are present virtually today. Denise Bauer, who is the new state board member serving for Cochise County. Sharon Holmbach, who is the new board member serving for Pinal County. And finally, Colleen Byron, who is serving in an at-large seat. So a warm welcome to all three of you.
Welcome.
And let me just, it's absolutely wonderful to have them. And unless you have more to say about that, I want to roll right into the board health and allow each of these three women to also introduce themselves in terms of their background and why they are here. So I didn't give them any time to practice. This will be right off the cuff. And so, Denise, if you can kick this off by telling us a little bit about yourself and why you're here on this board.
Hello, yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I am originally from Queens, Jamaica, New York. I majored in forestry at Virginia Tech and then moved out west. Somewhere in my career, I decided to change over from the U.S. Forest Service to the National Park Service and became really interested in our cultural history and what was going on. I guess after I retired, I ended up here in Douglas, and the Historical Society was probably one of the most active groups that I understood. I also, during my career, I'd also gotten a master's degree in public administration, where we focused on doing nonprofits, and that came from Marist College in Poughkeepsie, New York. I'm just really excited to be here. I had worked on another nonprofit. Basically, they dealt with forest leadership. They were based out of Washington, D.C., and I learned so much from them and really enjoyed working with the nonprofits and getting something done. So.
Well, we welcome your expertise, and it is impressive, and expect high things from you, Denise. Don't want to put you on the, for scrutiny or review, but we do welcome you. I would also like to have Colleen, we're going to go in alphabetical order here, Colleen to weigh in, introduce herself, and tell us a little bit something about her career.
Well,
I have always had a fondness for history in general and Arizona history in particular. In fact, I just picked up my second Roy Wayland Gas Bay Salmon Luncheon Valley National Bank tchotchke from a 1959 lunch. Can you imagine what it took to get salmon to Phoenix in 1959? So I'm a bit of a history geek. But that's not, I think, why I was allowed to join the board. I have a PhD in public administration, and while I was working on that PhD, I was a policy analyst for the Arizona Board of Regents, and I was specifically hired to work on the sunset audit that the Regents had at that time. So I expressed an interest in working with the Arizona Historical Society on the sunset audit that we are engaged in now. I look forward to working with everyone on a number of things. I mean, I'm on three other finance committees, so I look forward to contributing in whatever way I can, and I am thusly far really, really impressed with what I have seen from all the people that I have interacted with so far.
Pauline, what do you do in your day job?
I'm the lead faculty for the Northern Arizona Masters of Organizational Leadership program. I designed that program, actually, I run it. And it is a working professional program. You don't get into our program unless you have considerable work experience and preferably managerial or leadership work experience. It is a professional program. It's also highly academic, but it is a professional and terminal master's degree.
Thank you.
Okay, sign me up. Next, Sharon, you also have welcome to this board. You have a very interesting background, and we appreciate you being here. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hi, I'm Sharon Holmbach. I've been a resident of Arizona for 49 years. I grew up in Tucson, graduated with a Bachelor of Fine Arts degree from the U of A. I've created galleries and curated many, many exhibitions. I'm an artist in my own right. I've owned a number of historic properties and renovated them. Currently, I purchased the Triangle L Ranch in Oracle, which the first building was built in the 1880s. It has about a dozen buildings on the property, and I've owned that for about 20 years. So in addition to restoration and, managing the ranch, and it was one of the first food ranches in southern Arizona, so we continue to run it as a bed and breakfast, and because of my art background and my interest in the arts, we have converted the adobe barn into a contemporary gallery space. We have a gift shop, and we've created a 10-acre sculpture park out of the desert landscape. So I'm used to working with a lot of artists. I put on GLOW, which is a nighttime art experience that is set along the path at night. It's illuminated. We've had tens of thousands of visitors for that, and that's a little bit of what I do.
A lot of what you do. We're very, very appreciative, and so glad that the three of you are here. Let me also speak a little bit about committee appointments. And this is fluid, but part of my goals as president is to make certain committees robust so that we can think maybe better, differently about some of these issues. And I have asked Denise and Sharon to serve with Tom Rose on the properties committee and properties and buildings committee, probably because of their experience in managing historic properties, their interest in landscape, etc., and especially some things on our repair list that seem to just grow, deferred maintenance and so forth, and looking for some interesting ideas regarding things that are not on the SIP list but have to do with more aesthetic improvements and so forth, which may have an impact on fundraising. And Tom is going to give us a report later in the meeting. But this is, I think, one committee that hasn't received the kind of support and interest that is deserved in this board. Likewise, what you see from in Fitzer is the result of making the finance committee far more robust and more than just a placekeeper. I think both these committees are going to have a big role, evolving roles in the future. One other thing that in terms of, we have about 10 vacancies now, is that right, Jane?
We have nine vacancies.
Nine vacancies now.
Linda, you might also want to mention your Colleen's role, new role.
Yeah, on the executive committee as well. I mean, she's serving on a lot of stuff because she carries a lot of credentials with her, a lot of experience, and if she can save us time and money and if we can get it right at the front end, so much the better. We've learned a lot in the past, since June, about the appointment process through the governor's office. It has taken them a while to come to grips with the size of this board and the fact that we're one of the smallest agencies and we have the largest board. And it is also a kind of it's prescriptive in terms of who serves and how that is metered out and spread around the state. They got a hard time with it. And it looks as if we can expect appointments almost on a year-round basis. I think they're going to batch them new, perhaps along with renewed appointments, people who want to continue to serve. That was the pattern this past time. And I think it's going to occur year-round. And then they will end up submitting these names during the legislative session. They are not just going to wait until the legislative session is in session. And they have a year to do this. They feel confident that they can do that. But this seems to be more manageable for them and maybe more predictable for us. We have an ongoing conversation with that office. They have been understanding, patient, and overall very, very helpful. But understand that it is a learning curve for them as well. And lastly, I just going to Kelly, Robert, Tom, you may not have anything specific to say, but maybe you can tell us about when we can look for some recommendations regarding the election nomination process and so forth.
I'll just say that we are bouncing around some dates for the three of us to get together and hammer out a draft change to the bylaws that would hopefully address some of the shortcomings in our election of officers nomination and process. So Robert and Tom and I are just trying to hammer out a date when we can sit and do that, and then that looks like it's going to happen within the next 10 days or so. And then we'll craft that up and run it back up through the governance committee, executive committee, et cetera, before it would come to a full board for consideration.
Okay. I thank you for that. All right. Any questions about this? Sunset review, I think we already covered in James's report. I have nothing to add to that at this time. There may be more to add in the future, but not currently. The next is going to be the treasurer's report from Jim Snitzer, but I want to be able for him to move through this in an orderly way and without interruption. However, if someone has something that they want to say about any of these items that are under that, A through I, please let yourself be known so that we can hear you out. Hearing none. Jim, if you want to step in.
Linda, I'm sorry. Okay. Deborah Bateman has requested to speak to item 9H. And
she can do that at the, okay. Let's, and Deborah, do you want to speak to that now?
Well, I would ask you, would it be more timely to speak prior to 9H actually being discussed by Jim? Whatever is your pleasure.
Sure. Jim, do you have any problems with that? Do you want to have her speak now or when that comes up?
Jim's on mute.
Okay, unmute.
I can unmute him. I cannot.
Jim?
Yes.
Okay. Let me go. And then maybe that'll answer
your
question. Jim, I cannot hear you.
I'm going to mute him. Robert, we're getting a lot of feedback, so we're going to need to resituate Jim where we can, it's more important that we hear him than we see him.
That's
so,
right.
Focus on that. And in the meantime, Linda, Janice Klein has asked to speak on behalf of the Museum Association of Arizona, evidently to something in 9A through I. I don't know which one.
Okay. I will recognize Janice, for her to address anything within item A through I. The 9A through I. Janice.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I may be in the wrong place. I do not have an agenda in front of me, so I will defer until I find an agenda.
Janice, I will email it to you, and I suspect that you're going to want to speak to item 11A through C, but
yes.
I will email that.
Yes, I will defer to that. Thank you.
Okay, we'll recognize you then at that time. All right. Jim, it sounds like you have free rein to present your report, and it is detailed, it is lengthy, it is important. I want to make sure that you're able to get through this in an orderly way.
Okay, thanks. First of all, can you hear me okay?
Better. Yeah. It's better.
Okay. To start off with, go through your packet or scroll down through your packet. There are many pages of minutes, there are many pages of financial schedules, but you're looking for one that at the top of the page, it says top level overview through September. So while you're looking for top level overview through September, just a comment, the detailed financial statement, there's 15 pages of them, and they're important, and they're there in at least three different ways of slicing and dicing the same numbers for different purposes to highlight different things. But one of the tasks the finance committee set for itself was to try and condense that into something more understandable at the board level, so truthful, but more understandable. So our attempt to do that is this top-level overview through September. And I hope you're there because that's where I'm starting now. At the top of the page, you see note that it excludes a one-time donation of $1,608,099. And I'll talk about that in a while, but that's what I call the windfall. And then at the top, you see a block of numbers that are the budget for 2021. I'll go through this in detail, then we'll never have to do it again. You can see that this particular, that little block of numbers, basically incorporates 9 pages of detailed information that Ken puts together. And so, it's a very high level overview. As you can see on the left, there's 8 different categories, which you might classify things down. And then in each category, there's a revenue, like the top thing says, appropriations is the category. Revenue is $3,195,000. This is the 2021 budget, our current fiscal year. The expenses in the budget were $3,195,000. And you can see for most of the rest of the items, you show the change, you know, revenue minus expense. And then the beginning balance and the ending balance. So if you go on each line item, you can look at how that line item was budgeted. The very bottom line number said we had a budgeted revenue of a little over $4 million, $4,069,000. Way over on the right-hand side, highlighted in yellow, is the ending balance, $1,520,000 and change. For our purposes, the board, that's a very important number to focus on. That's how much money we have left in the checkbook. Two numbers to the left of that, you see a negative number, $145,267. That's our burn rate. That's how fast we're burning through that balance. Not a good thing. It gets worse. The next block of numbers I'm going to skip over. That's the year-to-date numbers. We're 3 months into the year. It doesn't give a very good picture because we've got a more than 3 months worth of appropriations, and our expenses less than the appropriation, so it looks better than it really is. The numbers that I think are the most important are the forecast for 2021. And you see again, if you look at that block of numbers, this is a forecast of where we're going to turn out at the end of our fiscal year. But at the bottom right-hand corner of that group of numbers, you can see that our balance right now, we think the balance at the end of 2021 will be just under $1 million, $998,000. To the left of that, two numbers to the left of that, you see that number in parentheses, $667,697. That's our burn rate. That's how fast we are going through our money. You don't have to be a finance guy to see that we're going through the money very, very quickly. Down below, just a quick analysis. There's all kinds of different forecasts. But, if the revenue recovers, yeah, things are better. That's not likely. There's a forecast that says 2022 looks a whole lot like 2021. That's the most likely. And we end the year with $332,147 in the balance. And that's really, you might as well say zero, and I'll explain that in a minute. And then the bottom of those numbers says the legislature cuts our funding by $1 million, but we do drastic cost reduction. We still end up with a very bad number. So this is realistic, but it's also doom and gloom. It says, it's a call to action. We've got to do something. Now, if you'll turn to the next page, it says top-level overview narrative. And this was an effort to manage to condense, you know, many, many, many pages to one page. This condenses from one page to a couple of numbers that are really important, the things that we have to focus on before. And you can see there's different years, 2021 budget, which we talked about, 2021 forecast, which we talked about, and 2022, next year. So if you look at those numbers to try and understand and focus on, the end of year balance, we started out with $1.6 million. At the end of 2021, our budget was to drop that down to $1.5 million with a burn rate of $145,000. And that said, we had 8 years to a point of no return. Well, that got blown away with COVID. The 2021 forecast right now says we're going to end the year with 998,000. Our burn rate is 657,000. And at the end of this year, we have 1 year to live. Let's talk about that 1 year. 2022, we burned down to 332,000, and that's a shutdown. So you see down below, I'll read the narrative, the 2022 forecast of 332,147 is a minimum. 148,000 of that balance is trust money that cannot be touched. And the remaining 184,000 represents the practical cost of closing down and vacating all AHS facilities and putting the collections into storage as they are placed into state custody. Realistically, that's not going to happen, but something is going to happen. And we're running out of money, and we're going to be taking action to the board. So I've got to tell you from my standpoint as a money guy, some of the things we're going to be talking about later on are small potatoes compared to shutting this place down. So I want to get through those things, those small potatoes. We've got some bigger fish to fry down the road as a board. Okay, so that's the end of the financial numbers. Linda, I'm just going to keep going and go through my packet, and then we can understand. Okay, the next page is at the top. It says Treasurer and Finance Committee. The good news is I'm not going to spend any time at all on this sheet. This talks about the roles of the Finance Committee. I'm very aware right now there's 65 people on this call. Every minute I speak takes up an hour of your time. So I'm going to not speak to this. Just be aware, especially board members, be aware that the bylaws don't really clarify the role of the Treasurer and the Finance Committee. And ARS kind of gives me all kinds of power, but I don't know how to exercise. So down below, it just says the Finance Committee and the Treasurer need to work together and then come back to the board. We're probably going to have some bylaws amendments to really define our role. So right now, right this red-hot minute, I see the role of the Treasurer and the Finance Committee as trying to take complicated issues, simplify them truthfully, and speak to those financial issues to the board in a way that the board can adjust them. So enough said, that's going to be future work on the roles. The next page up at the top says Sunset Audit Comments. And again, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, but down below you can see there's a table with some yellow highlights. Those are all the Sunset Audit Comments. The ones in yellow are ones that, in my humble opinion, have a high financial component. And you can see there's a lot of them that have a high financial component. They're sort of in two groups. That group at the bottom is nuts and bolts financial control issues. And those, I'm convinced, are being relatively well handled. The ones at the top, I'll talk to a little bit more. I'm going to step on some toes with this. But in my narrative here, I just say for most of these issues, the Arizona Historical Society has responded, and they even consider the issue closed. It is clear, though, that the Auditor General does not really feel that AHS has been fully responded. If I was the Auditor General, that's what I would say. In various communications to state legislators, the Auditor General has made their concerns about AHS clear. That has directly led to an unfavorable view of AHS by the legislators and a reduction in state funding. I wrote this a couple of months ago to present to the Finance Committee, and down below you see that I'm telling the Finance Committee we need to particularly address ourselves to three areas, fundraising, MOUs, and the chapters, because those things were what gave the Auditor General angina when they looked at our organization. So enough about Sunset Audits, but you're going to see me come back to you about those things, fundraising, MOUs, and chapters. Okay, the next sheet is very short and sweet. It's just a little tiny spreadsheet about the cost of a staff person versus the temp versus a volunteer. This came up in our phone call at the last meeting. I just wanted to set the record straight. The person that commented said, why are you hiring these temps? A temp costs more than a staff person. And the answer is no, they don't. So if you look, a staff person has a higher base salary, which is why we would say, I mean, if you think about, say, somebody being at the front desk, that could be a staff person, a temp, or a volunteer to welcome people in. A staff person has a pretty high skill set to be using them as a greeter, but they would have a base salary of $2,400. The important thing is their burden rate is 45% by state rules. So you come up with a number. If it's a temp, they have a salary which is typically lower and a much lower burden rate of 26%. So even if the staff person is only paid what a temp is, you still have to add 45%. So staff people cost quite a bit more than some temps. And, of course, volunteers are free, right? No. It's a loose number, but between $200 to $1,200 a month is realistically what it costs to have a volunteer, because you've got to recruit them, train them, and add supervision. So that's just some background information. Okay, let's see, where are you now? I've got item number F is a motion from me as treasurer. Linda, I suggest we take this up at the very end. Is that right? We take up this motion. I'll make it now, but we'll discuss it all at the end, or do you want to discuss it right now?
I think we can, we'll know where we stand, I think, relatively quickly. And Jim, give us, the rationale for, from a financial viewpoint, and I can give the rationale from, a new member's orientation appointment viewpoint. So go ahead.
Okay, so the rationale talking about changing the timing of the annual meeting, right now it's scheduled for April, but our year ends in July. So you have this absolutely terrible situation where the old year is long over, but it's too soon to talk about the new year. The right time to have an annual meeting is right after you issue your annual report. And just speaking as a finance guy, but I see this as a big financial issue. So from my standpoint, the fastest they can pull together the year ends at the end of July, it takes about 45 days to get all the numbers down and finalized. So I'm making a motion that we change the timing of our annual meeting to not sooner than the end of September, which will allow us to actually review the year we just had and do some serious discussion at that point, knowing how the year ended, about the year to come, especially when, you know, according to my numbers, that year to come could be our last year if we don't take action. So that's my motion.
Let me add to that what we know now about new appointments. I think originally that date in April, the assumption was made that we would have new board appointments certainly by the end of the legislative session, but it turns out that's not how they're doing things. We're no longer pinned to the end of the legislative session because these appointments likely will occur year-round. We do, if the immediate task is any indication, they may batch these in groups of maybe seven or so. Who are new? Who are reappointments? We would expect some, actually, in the near future. So this idea is that we will have some coming on board through the summer, and we can wrap this into the annual meeting as well. Hang on. Oh, man. Can you hear me? My computer just cut out.
Yes, we can hear you, Linda.
Okay.
We can see you as well.
Okay, good. So the motion is to changed the timing of the AHS membership meeting, which is currently in April, to about the fourth Friday in September, so that we can combine some things that make more sense and present more data for the board to discuss the stuff. Can I have a motion, Jim's motion, to accept these changes? James, help me with this. Who came in first? Who came in second?
Well, Jim made the motion. I think Bruce and I suspect our parliamentarian, Mr. Lacey, can advise us as to whether or not we actually need a second. This is a recommendation that's come out of the committee. Don, can you help with that? You're on mute.
Yes, a recommendation made by a standing committee is a motion that does not require a second. But I think that I don't know if this is a recommendation made by the finance committee or the treasurer.
My understanding is this comes as a result of the finance committee meeting.
Yeah, well, if it is a recommendation made by the finance committee, then it is a motion that does not require a second.
So we accept as submitted?
Well, you have to vote on it.
Okay.
But the motion's on the floor, and would then be open for discussion.
Okay. All right. We don't need a second. We have a motion to vote on this change. Do we have any discussion, any questions from board members?
Tom?
One of the issues that we've had over the years is attendance at the board meeting or at the annual meeting, and it has typically been in November to correspond with homecoming. That was changed 2 years ago so that we could have an annual meeting in conjunction with the Arizona History Convention. And I think that did result in a much better attendance at the annual meeting and a way of making interesting presentations and awards as part of that annual meeting of the Arizona Historical Society. I'm just afraid that by moving it to some other date, you're not going to have participation, and any of the awards that are granted in conjunction with the annual meeting will not get the type of publicity that you really want. But I suppose that if you're looking at something to create, there's certainly nothing wrong with having, or at least in my view, and having a distribution of information, and perhaps just a casting of votes that might be needed as a formality, and then having the meeting of the members at some other time. But that's my thought.
Could you update us on where we're going with the convention, James or anyone else?
Well, I think David's on the line.
Yeah, the convention. Yeah, we did have a meeting, and the convention will be held virtually this year in April. And David, you could give us the specific date, but this is an unusual time, and so we're not going to have an in-person meeting.
If you'd like to know, the dates are April 20th through the 24th, and it'll all be held virtually.
I have a question then. There's not a meeting or a gathering of people or whatever. Does it make some of your concerns, at least for this coming year, John, kind of moot?
Certainly for the, for 2021, it's moot. But I think that, you know, what we're really talking about, what this looks like going forward.
I would also just add, too, that we've connected with the New Mexico Historical Society folks and plan to partner with them for 2022. So it'll be in New Mexico in 2022.
Any other observations, discussions, concerns? Okay, hearing none, I want to call the vote and see who is in favor of the change or is in favor of just leaving things as is. And this will be a roll call vote, so either Robert or James can
call. I'll handle the virtual, and Robert, I will need you to speak into the mic and let us know the votes of the folks who are on ground there in the auditorium. So let's start with Robert Ballard.
Yes.
Denise Bauer. You're on mute, Denise.
May I abstain from this vote?
Certainly.
Thank you, I abstain.
Lorna Brooks.
I'm in favor of leaving it as it is for now and reviewing it in a year, year and a half.
Janice Bryson.
We're really having problems here because we are getting the mic images and stuff. So I guess we couldn't really have a discussion because we couldn't let you guys hear it. My concern when we had it with the convention is that then those of us on the board missed the speakers. But anyway, I will agree with Jen to change it to September.
Okay, and I just want to clarify, Robert, we have four or five mics in the room, so what seems to be happening with the audio?
We only have one pass around.
Okay, do I need to send someone else down there that can run it around the room?
Yeah, we need to have
this. Okay, we'll send someone down. Thank you, Janice. Colleen Byron.
In favor of the change.
Kelly Corsett.
Yes.
Voy Coy.
No.
Tom Foster. Tom Foster?
Yeah, there we go. I couldn't get unmuted. Yeah, we'll go with the change.
Bruce Quinn.
Yes.
Sharon Holmback.
Vote yes.
John Lacey.
I vote no, but with a comment that, you know, we need to figure out ways of getting attendance at the annual meeting if this motion passes.
Okay. Tom Rose.
He votes no.
Very good. Greg Scott.
I vote yes, as I did in the committee.
Okay. Jim Snitzer.
Yes.
Michael Wade.
He votes no.
Linda Whitaker.
Yes.
Let me do a tally for you, Linda. You have 10 yes, 1 abstain, and 5 no. The motion passes.
And I like the idea that we can re-examine this in 2 years and also explore increasing participation. I think we can do both and see where we stand. It's an experiment. Let's see what happens and if this fulfills the intent of this. So, Jim, if you want to go on and G, I think we can, G is also specified under number 11. So do we want to wait until then?
I think what I'll do, if it's okay, I'll just read us through this because I think this just provides some background information. This is the Finance Committee review of the MOUs, and the Finance Committee, I would say tell me in dollars. Remember, I said before the burn rate is $667,000 plus, and this is $100,000. I'm motivated. But the recommendation, Finance Committee, this is not a recommendation for action, not a motion. Just recommendations. Our two cents worth says that AHS recommends that AHS officially notify the MOUs as soon as possible that AHS can no longer support the MOUs and will be ending their relationship. Exact timing should be staff. AHS should not enter into arrangements in the future. The limited operational resources should be focused on managing collections and operations on AHS owned properties. And that mirrors the recommendation of the Auditor General. Down below in the question and answer format, I've tried to provide some background information. Over the last four fiscal years, what has AHS spent on those three MOUs? And you can see the answer there, Reardon greater than $96,000. All of these are accelerated, of course, $70,000. Let me stop a minute to say that all these numbers always have they're difficult numbers to get at because there's two questions, dedicated and allocated. If you say what's the expense of something, you can say, there's the electric bill and the rent or whatever that directly, the direct expenses. But there's also some percentage of staff time that's taken up with those. So that's the allocated part. And that's a lot harder to pin down. The numbers I've got are dedicated, so the real cost is higher. But this is the out-of-pocket cost. Can the MOUs continue under AHS funding and operations? No. One way or the other, no. Due to lack of funding and staffing resources, AHS could not reopen the facilities. They will only reopen if some local organization steps up and works with the MOU landlords to adopt and reopen them. What notice and timing is involved? All three MOUs were informally notified in July. No response to date. This paper was written, a while back, but I think that's still true. No response to date. Hopefully putting everybody on official notice that AHS can no longer sustain the relationship will incentivize some local organization to step up. This is wrong. This has changed. I say it will incentivize some local organization to step up and work with the AHS staff. That's not correct. They need to work with the landlord. AHS is just a tenant. Whoever steps up needs to work with the landlord. Who are the landlords? And what is the contact information? Answer, AHS can provide that. What is the approximate current monthly cost for each closed MOU? Reardon, $8,000 a month, Fort Lowell, $285, downtown, $230, plus substantial, this is that dedicated, allocated thing. That's the dedicated cost. Additional costs are allocated, but a portion of staff time. If a local organization, some of this I think is important. If a local organization took over an MOU, what would their cost and revenue look like? Answer, that would totally depend on what operating plan they adopt. Hours of operation, number and type of staff, etc. In general, their operating costs would be lower, possibly much lower, than they were for AHS because they would not have to operate under the state accounting rules and the state benefit costs for employees. Realistically, in any case, they would probably still require some level of local support. The last Q&A, right now this looks like a stalemate. I understand we may talk about it in a minute. If the stalemate continues and no action is taken, what happens? Answer, no action is not an option. AHS is required to take certain actions. Some collections at each MOU belong to AHS and are in essence state property. AHS would be required to properly care for those properties, most likely by bringing them into a controlled storage location owned by AHF, which is to say on their estate. Fort Lowell's a special concern due to condition of the building, security concerns, and lack of climate control. Inadequate care of collections was a sunset audit comment. Second thought point, AHS would also be required to limit ongoing expenses to the absolute minimum. This would lead to further reductions at Reardon. Finally, once AHS takes the required actions of removing and safeguarding collections and eliminating expense, once all that's done, the MOU landlords will likely notify us and terminate. What's the point after that? Wells Fargo has already announced the closing. That's an example, but Wells Fargo has already announced the closing of several of their museums. So that's just provided not for action, but for information to the board. The next one is a discussion recommendation of Finance Committee regarding the behest to AHS.
Deborah has been granted 5 minutes to speak about that.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Deborah Bateman. I'm a third-generation Arizonan. I am a 50-year career banker. I'm currently the vice chairman at National Bank of Arizona, which is a community bank with a statewide footprint. I'm a member of the Friends of the Arizona Historical Society Board, and I'm also a member of the AHS Finance Committee. Today, what I want to do is appeal to you as not only a career banker, a member of the Finance Committee, and a member of Friends, and really talk about this upcoming motion. Friends, under the leadership of Bruce Quinn, is an organization that is currently evolving into a statewide development organization for the behalf of Arizona Historical Society. I want to stress my belief and conviction in the Finance Committee's upcoming recommendation, which is to earmark the recent $1.6 million windfall to efforts to raise capital for Arizona Historical Society. It's my very firm belief that this action will not only retain the mission of the Arizona Historical Society, but it fully embrace and enhance our ability to carry out our mission and sustain our mission. It is reinforced by my business background and experience that this action is focused on the long-term strategy to raise material new capital that will ensure our sustainability, our viability, and our future impact. I believe that this action is absolutely groundbreaking, and it will create the opportunities for Arizona Historical Society to make a material impact, not only within our state, but also nationally and perhaps even globally. The impacts could include the enhancement of our state's perception, the impact that we've made, the contributions that we've put forward, and the legacy of our state. My bottom line is that I want to encourage you to think of these monies as an investment in our future, an investment that could net a return that is much, much greater than the initial windfall. I ask you to not consider it as a contingency fund to shore up what Mr. Sister referred to earlier as the burn rate. I thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Deborah. And Linda, just a point of how the staff in the auditorium has asked me to announce anyone in the Steele auditorium who wishes to make comments, please raise your hands. a mic will be brought to you by a staff member. Thank you. Sorry, Linda.
Jim, thank you for those comments, Deborah. But Jim, let's have some background and some context about this windfall for people who don't know anything about it and don't know what you're talking about.
Okay, thanks. I'll just read us through this paper, and it should be in your packet. Recommendation for the windfall donation. Remember way back when I first started and I had that $1.6 million at the top of that sheet, which I said was the financial overview in September? That's what we're talking about. So have you heard the story about the guy who won the lottery and a year later he was broke again? Well, AHS just won the lottery. We sold a donated piece of land for $1.6 million. On an ongoing operational basis, AHS is running out of money. That's what we just talked about. We must solve those ongoing problems, not just use this money to go broke slower. That rules out using it for ongoing operations. For example, we could give staff much needed and much deserved raises, but that would just add to the ongoing operational problems once the money, windfall money ran out. We need to use this money to make more money, not just spend it down to zero. Further, even having it on our books is a problem. It gives a false financial picture and might lead the legislature to further reduce our funding even further. On our side, adding a large sum to our balance unfortunately lessens the pressure to solve our operational problems. Finance Committee recommendation. This money should be earmarked for capital campaign fundraising to provide continued viability of AHS. Our biggest need and our highest priority is money. In this COVID-19 environment, opportunities for revenue generation, visits, programs, and events have been greatly diminished, and that situation will continue. We need to act to shore up our funding. Raising money is a skill set, and we need to hire professionals and put them to work. So the recommendation from the Finance Committee is direct staff to contract for fundraising services. And I guess that's a recommendation, but it's also a motion from the Finance Committee.
And we missed part of that, Jim, a motion to contract with Friends of AHS, Inc. Didn't hear the end of it.
The motion is to direct staff to contract for fundraising services using that $1.6 million to issue a contract. That contract would get the money off our books. A potential candidate would be Friends. But by Arizona state rules, we have to go through a procurement process if we're going to award a contract, and so we will go through that process if this motion is accepted.
Okay, so we have a motion on the floor made by the Finance Committee, and if I understand the rationale here, we don't need a second, but perhaps we need further discussion before there is a roll call vote. Question.
If I may speak up, as president of the Friends of AHS, we've been working very hard under the guidance of Deborah Bateman and to put together a capital campaign. It's going to take, it takes money to make money. In other words, we have to prime the pump to get money coming in. This campaign is so designed that it should help us take care of endowments, it should help us take care of some infrastructure, it should help us take care of some other things. But in order to run this capital campaign, for instance, we need a feasibility study first, which is going to cost, I forget what it is, $98,000, something like that, to at least understand if we can do it. We think we can, and we think the feasibility study will come back positive. We need to do that first. We need to do our homework first. But it is most important, it is catamount to the success of this thing that we get this capital campaign up and going. So I encourage the approval of this motion.
And Linda, I understand we have someone in the auditorium wishing to speak.
Please speak to whoever that is.
This is Michael Ray. I have a question, and I'm very much inclined to support this. The question I have, though, is do you know of any other organization, state agency, that has raised money in a similar fashion? Because I know of organizations that are not state agencies that have raised money, you know, the various nonprofits. But one of the challenges we've always had in the past with trying to raise money is people will say, well, you're a state agency, let the legislature pay for your needs. So can you point to a place where a state agency contracted out, went through a capital campaign, and they were able to raise a sizable amount of money?
I can take that, Linda, if you'd like.
Go ahead.
In Arizona, I cannot, Michael. I can only speak from national experience with the organizations that most closely mirror the Arizona Historical Society as kind of quasi-state agencies. The most recent successes I can think of are the Indiana State Museum and Historic Sites, History Colorado, and the Idaho. I could always get that name wrong. I think it's the Idaho State Museum and Historical Society.
And I think that certainly I'm not aware of any historic agencies in Arizona, but if you look at the various universities, I mean, they're running capital campaigns all the time.
That's a good point, Tom.
And the other thing I'm just going to add is the Sunset Reviewers also wanted to see us demonstrate the ability to do fundraise. They didn't specify the amount, but they wanted a functional arm in which to do that. And I think this may satisfy them, should satisfy them. Anybody else?
One other comment. We have been adding to our Friends of AHS board quite a group of people that know where to raise money, and it's getting better every day. It is gaining strength in numbers and in status, and I think it's improving on a. We are aimed at success, I guess is what I'm telling you. We are aimed at success.
To me, that's a vote of confidence. If you're able to attract these people who can help us generate money for the campaign, to me, I see that as a vote of confidence. They see a future for us, as we do for ourselves. Anything else?
Good question, Lena. This is Tom Rose. Question for Bruce, James, and Oscar James. In these requests, has there been any effort to communicate with people that are asking funds to help them not donate any to AHS, but into friends, and is that a legal way to do it? It would take the funds off of the books and put them with friends. Friends can be specified to donate them to a certain feature or point. In AHS, this would save a lot of the special problems.
Sure would, Tom. I heartily agree with that. This particular windfall, as Jim called it, was actually not a donation. It was a bequest, and it was a bequest of real property. And we honestly don't know why the philanthropist that left it to us chose to leave it on the state side versus the friend side going forward. Planned giving will certainly be a component of our fundraising efforts. And I absolutely agree with you that should try to be done through the friends group. Jim or Bruce, do you want to add to that?
Unmute.
The same thing, James, is a lot of agencies and organizations spend a lot of their time and money sort of with law firms to acquaint them with the possibility of signing.
Yes, actually, we have started to talk about that through friends. Deborah and Bruce and I have been chatting about that recently, and we wholeheartedly agree, Tom.
John, do you have any other observations or encouragement here?
Well, I think that the, in essence, friends has taken over the or operated as the attempted fundraising arm of the Arizona Historical Society, and I think that I certainly encourage the approval of this action so that we can go ahead with the the studying how we implement a capital campaign. Now, I think that, it's certainly the comment is valid that we need to do so since the funds belong to the state of Arizona, to do it in a way that conforms with Arizona statutes. But I support the motion.
Okay. If there are no more comments, either for or against, I'd like to call the vote. And let's have a roll call, please.
Yes, ma'am. Robert Ballard.
Yes.
Denise Bauer.
Yes.
Lorna Brooks.
Yes.
Very good. Yes for Lorna. Janice Bryson.
Yes.
Colleen Byron.
Yes.
Kelly Corsett.
Yes.
Voy Coy.
Yes.
Tom Foster.
Yes.
Bruce Gwynn.
Yes.
Sharon Holmback.
Yes.
John Lacey.
Yes.
Tom Rose.
Yes.
Greg Scott.
Yes.
Jim Snitzer.
Yes.
Michael Wade.
Yes.
Linda Whitaker.
Yes.
Linda, you have 16 yes, no no's, no abstentions. Motion passes.
And I hope that this meets with Bruce's and Deborah's satisfaction. It certainly opens the door for proceeding. And John, hope you're happy as well. This is a big step forward for us, and let's make the most of this.
Thank you very, very much.
Okay, fair warning about the next thing. This is a brief overview only. It is not a vote, but it is certainly a preliminary report based on study that has been done by the Finance Committee. So go ahead, Jim, and report on this.
Okay, thank you. And thank you, Board. I mean, this is going to be, this is the most important thing we've done today and maybe for some time. And it really is important for the future of this organization. So, and just thank you, Board, for taking action. Now, this next, there's three pages, but I'm going to step through them as fast as I can. The first page is about the chapters and a relationship with AHS. So this is about the chapters. But go to the third page back, and you'll see a horizontal chart that's in very, very small print. And this one page distills a lot of information from a huge amount of individual charters for individual chapters. I'm not going to read you through it, but just a couple of comments. If you'll notice, there are four chapters that are kind of somewhat alike. In one chapter, Eastern, is very different. The first four chapters were formed in the last century, okay? I choose those words deliberately. They were formed a long time ago. And so this chart represents our agreement with the chapters, but it's very outmoded, and nobody is living up to it. For example, if you look at the second line, if you can read it, you may need a magnifying glass, but the representatives on the board, according to our existing agreements with the chapters, there should be 29 representatives from the chapter sitting on this board. Not the case, we're not following it. A little bit further down, it talks about fundraising, and it says the board of directors of the chapter shall raise funds for the society. That was a big reason for the chapters to exist. But that's been superseded by the legislative suites and the reaction to that of creating 501c3s. And then down below, you can see there's all kinds of different arrangements on who owns the collection, who's responsible for what. So now, just be aware that that exists, and then drop back with me to the first page, where at the top it says chapters and their relationship with AHF. And I'll read us through this quickly. First is an editorial comment. The finance committee should make recommendations on financial issues. That's what I'm supposed to do, not operational issues. And we have done so. Why? In the process of understanding this complicated situation, we have reviewed earlier work and come to some additional understandings and conclusions, not recommendations. And nothing here is for action today. I'm just trying to open up the discussion and have smarter heads prevail. We're also providing those additional understandings and conclusions to assist the board in developing their actions. And remember, this is part of what got us involved, is this was an Auditor General comment. The Auditor General had comments about the money related to chapters, which I am responding to. The Auditor General also had comments about the operations of the chapters, which I'm going to mention. Okay, the first is the Finance Committee recommendation not for action today. We should eliminate revenue sharing from AHS to the chapters. Per the attachment, chapter agreements include a revenue sharing with AHS of the dues, but the basic dues do not even cover the cost of the publication. No additional 1107 money should be allocated. Any unspent 1107 money should be spent within 6 months on AHS-approved projects or reallocated within AHS. As of September 30th, unspent 1107 funds amounted to $69,931. A couple of comments, a couple of supporting things for these recommendations. The 1107 funds are a source of conflict. Part of the reason they remain unspent is that the chapters want to spend funds on projects that cannot be authorized by AHS due to state regulations. This is state money. At the same time, AHS has identified possible projects that do meet the state requirements, but the chapters may not have an interest in those projects. The next one is, and I won't read it, but just the 1107 money were criticized by the Auditor General in the Sunset Audit, heavily criticized. So I've spoken to the money issue. Now, the additional comments and conclusions. This is not a new problem. Almost from the inception of the chapters, there have been strains and conflicts. In fact, one of the Auditor General's concerns with AHS is that we have not acted to solve an old and obvious problem. I could stop there if I want, but it's an old and obvious problem. We should be solving it. It wasn't a Sunset Audit, and I won't read the fine print below, but the Auditor General has some concerns. If you turn the page or go to the next page, there's another bunch of fine print where the Auditor General has basically cried on the shoulders of the state legislature complaining about AHS not taking care of this issue. So it's an old and obvious problem. We need to do something about it. I'm recommending some things we need to do with the financial stuff, but board We've got to do something on the operational stuff. I conclude. Conclusions. Chapters potentially provide unique advantages in promoting AHS within local communities, advising AHS on local issues, recruiting volunteers, and fundraising. The existing formal written agreements between AHS and the chapters are outdated and no longer operational. The Auditor General has strongly urged that the formal relationship between the chapters and AHS be restructured or eliminated entirely. Conclusion. The formal relationship between AHS and the chapters must be reexamined by both the chapters and AHS. If a formal relationship is continued, it must be restructured, paying particular attention to fixing old issues that have caused conflict in three areas. First, the rules. As a state organization, AHS has to follow the state rules. Chapters are currently part of AHS, and chapters are also required to follow the state rules, but they don't. The AHS board should ensure that if the chapters remain a formal part of AHS, they follow the rules. Chapters may decide that the rules are too restrictive and may want to change to an informal relationship with AHS, but we need to solve it. Next is the chain of command. And let me stop here. There was a separate study done, completely independent of what I did, and they came to the same conclusion with respect to volunteers, that we have the same two issues, the rules and the chain of command. So this is something that it was obvious to the Attorney General. It's been obvious to people that have taken a quick look at this, like me and the other one. The chain of command. The museums are state of Arizona property, and the state has charged AHS to manage them. Like other volunteers, chapter members are there to support staff and receive direction from them, not the other way around. AHS board should ensure that the chain of command is clear, is in place, and is respected. Finally, fundraising. Due to changes since the chapters were initially formed many years ago, fundraising has shifted to independent 501c3 organizations where the money is sheltered from legislative sweeps. This major change may have eliminated a major reason for chapters to maintain a formal relationship with AHS. Okay, that's the end of my conclusions and recommendations in my report. Questions?
This sort of sets the stage about further discussions and analysis of the documents that we have. Jim, we have given everyone on this board founding documents and more recent documents. They total well over 200 pages. It's everything we could find in our archives that related to this issue, studies that were done, individual efforts, and so forth. So moving forward, and because we are going to be having a meeting on January 8th, full board meeting with the AG's office, this becomes work, things to work on in the coming months. Deliberate, careful, thoughtful, and collaborative. So just know that we will proceed forward in an orderly, thoughtful manner. Let's move on to number 10. And I am looking for a motion to untable discussion and action that was made on August 14th regarding MOUs with the Downtown History Museum, Fort Lowell, and Reardon Mansion. I'm looking for someone to make that motion.
I'll make the motion to remove the
okay, Linda, you have a motion from John. You also have one from Colleen Byron. So you have two. You have a second.
Okay, it is now on table and now open for comment and discussion. And I've been looking at the chat.
Well, I know you have to take a vote, so I'm taking
Sorry. Okay. So those are in favor of untabling. Let's also have a roll call vote.
Yes. Okay. Robert Ballard.
Yes, in favor.
Denise Bauer.
Yes, in favor.
Lorna Brooks.
Yes, in favor.
Janice Bryson.
Yes.
Colleen Myron.
Yes.
Kelly Corset.
Yes.
Boy Coy.
Yes.
Tom Foster.
Yes.
Bruce Gwynn.
Yes.
Sharon Holmback.
Yes.
John Lacey.
Yes.
Tom Rose.
Yes.
Greg Scott.
Yes.
Jim Snitzer.
Yes.
Michael Wade.
Yes. Yes.
And finally, Linda Whitaker.
Yes.
That's unanimous, Linda.
Okay. So we will proceed and talk about number 11. A couple of things here. We're not ready to vote yet, not asking anybody to weigh in yet, but there have been some very thoughtful and some first-time speakers from the public, and because we have not heard from Lisa Schnedley, I would like to recognize her so that she can either read or simply testify for what she sees about Reardon. And we're entertaining all comments about all the MOUs.
Right. So, Robert, please get a list lined up of folks in the auditorium. And then for folks who are in the chat, if you begin typing in the chat to let me know that you'd like to speak, we'll take them in the order that they come in. Linda, unfortunately, Lisa had to depart the meeting early, but I know it would mean a lot to her if her comment was quickly read. May I do so?
Please do that.
Lisa Schnedley has noted, quote, I had hoped comments from the public would be better supported and that they could have been made sooner. I'm unable to wait any longer and will leave my comment here. As a member of the Arizona Historical League, it was my honor to volunteer to create copy for the second edition of Tasted and Treasures, which continues to generate revenue for AHS. As an author, I also wrote the official book for the Arizona Centennial, Arizona 100 Years Grand. That book contained 100 significant aspects of Arizona. Reardon House was one. Northern Arizona holds much of the beauty and historical significance of our state and draws millions of tourists, which contribute millions of dollars to state coffers annually. However, since they lack the population density of central and southern Arizona, Northern Arizona lacks financial muscle in most arenas. While it's been made abundantly clear that the MOU is going away, I would implore this group to attempt to think creatively about Reardon, to remain open to proposals to perhaps at least contribute to Reardon's future. It breaks my heart to see this unfolding. I hope that the AHS will be part of efforts to preserve and share other valuable Northern Arizona history by lending support in the future. Thank you.
Okay, we will make sure that it's part of the record. I see Karen Malice Clark has commented here, but if she wants to read that or add to that comment, I'd like to recognize her now.
Thank you very much. This is Karen coming to you from Flagstaff, and let me scroll back. Thank you for this opportunity to read my column or to read my comments. Reardon Mansion State Historic Park has served as a community gathering place for programs that reflect and emphasize our local sense of place, history, and community identity in the Flagstaff area. These sorts of activities celebrate and sustain the intent of the Reardon brothers and their contemporaries to build community in Flagstaff. I support the continued operation of Reardon Mansion State Historic Park. And I'm a longtime Flagstaff resident, and I'm retired U.S. Forest Service, so I particularly appreciate the part in local logging history that Reardon Mansion provides.
Thank you for that. We would agree that this is a gorgeous, gorgeous house and an icon in its own right. Sybil Smith, would you like to add to that? Sybil?
Yes, I'm here, finding the unmute button. So basically, I'm a 42-year resident of Flagstaff, and support with Karen's comments are, my comment is in writing earlier in the chat room, and I just think that it is an important part of Flagstaff history. It is Flagstaff's history. So if we can find in some collaborative way to continue with state parks and or other options, I think we need to keep working on it. These are incredible treasures we have for our both state history and certainly local history. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sybil. We would certainly agree with that. It is a treasure. Kristen Witten.
Yeah, can you hear me?
We can.
Okay, yeah. No, I would just like to, I mean, I can go ahead and read my comments again. I have been a volunteer with the Reardon Mansion since 2017. I would be absolutely devastated if it were to close. Trying to scroll up to my comments. I am currently employed with Arizona State Parks and Trails. I'm so sorry. I'm actually at work right now. I work at Slide Rock, and I just wanted to reiterate that it's enormously significant to the local community, and I hope that there will be a way to keep it open even if the agreement between state parks and Arizona Historical Society is dissolved. That's all.
Thank you, Kristen. I'm very appreciative of your young voice added to this.
Linda, there are two other folks who have commented in the chat. You might want to ask if they wish to speak as well.
Recognize them, please.
Duffy Westheimer would like to, she'd like to comment about Reardon, and Mr. Frank Flash with the Historic Fort Lowell Neighborhood Association has left a comment about downtown and Fort Lowell.
Okay, so recognize them in that order. Duffy, are you there? Is Duffy there? Is he still on?
I think she may have had to drop off, Linda.
Okay, but we will accept her fine statements as part of the record. Frank Flash?
Well, Mike and Gordon. I just want to make a comment. After sitting in on both this meeting and the previous meeting when this was first discussed as far as the terminating the MOUs, I realize that this is a tough financial decision to be made, but it's a reality-based decision. I hope going forward, though, that the AHS would be willing to work with the, as you call it, the landlords and any other interested parties in trying to keep these museums open. I know it's a tough job, but they do mean a lot to the Tucson area. Thank you.
And you're right. They do mean a lot. And given the robust response from the local community, I'm greatly heartened that there may be people or entities willing to step forward and keep them open in some fashion. Yes, we come to these discussions very reluctantly and painfully. Is there anybody else on this list?
Yes, there is. There's Zachary Norris is next in the chat box, would like to speak about Reardon. Following him, Janice Klein would still like to speak on behalf of the Museum of Northern Arizona.
Okay, I don't see that quite on my chat, but would you please recognize them in the order you just stated?
Sir, Zachary Norris, would you like to speak about Reardon Mansion State Park?
Yeah, certainly. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Hi, so my name is Zachary Norris. I am a resident of Flagstaff. I've been born and raised here, and I am just entering into my freshman year of college, so I just graduated from high school. I just wanted to briefly speak about kind of the importance that Rudin's had to me in my time growing up in Flagstaff. You know, we have a lot of treasures in northern Arizona. I think that's something that people have really hit on. But just kind of speaking from the experience of a kid who grew up with the ability to learn about the history around me, it is certainly something in Rudin Mansion. It's certainly something that helped me stay involved in my curiosity for history as I was going through my education, right? We learn a lot about the history of the United States and of the world. We can't always see how it relates to us, but Rudin Mansion was one of those things that showed me why we study history, how it affects us today. And, you know, I'm greatly saddened to hear that there's a possibility that it could be going away. Nobody else has really mentioned it so far, but Rudin Mansion does have a very close proximity to NAU, which is something that gives me a little bit of concern as far as the continued existence of the house itself. So I just kind of wanted to throw it in there, let you guys know that it's not only older folks who care about history. It's, you know, a young person who's going into college right now who's really invested. I've been on this call for almost 2 hours just listening. And I just wanted to kind of put my comment in there. So thank you, guys.
Well, thank you, Zachary. Yours is the kind of voice that we need. And I bet local people up there may be eyeing you and recruiting you for some task related to its continued preservation. You have an important voice, important things to say, and I do appreciate it.
Indeed. And, Zachary, I want to commend you as well. And as I said in the chat, in case you miss it, you remind me of my own students, and you inspire me. And folks like you give me hope for the future. So thank you for taking the time to spend with us this afternoon and share your memories of Rudin Mansion. Next up, we have Janice Klein representing the Museum Association of Arizona. She has put a comment in the chat, which is very helpful. But Janice, would you like a chance to speak as well?
Just to reiterate what I've put in the chat, on behalf of the Museum Association of Arizona Board, should the Arizona Historical Society Board vote in favor of dissolving the agreements between AHS and the Downtown History Museum, Fort Lowell Museum, and Reardon Mansion, the Museum Association of Arizona urges all of the concerned parties, including AHS, to work together to develop transition plans for each of the sites. MAA is ready to assist in any way we can.
Thank you very much, Janice. I think we have run out of folks in the chat box. Robert, I imagine there must be some folks there in the auditorium who would like to speak. And Bruce, I see Bruce would like to speak as well.
If I could, but about 20 years ago, the state decided that the Yuma Territorial Prison, which has been in more movies than most movie actors, and the Quartermaster State Park were no longer viable, and they were, you know, the City of Yuma, the Visitors Bureau, the City Council, the Mayor, and pretty much the whole town said, that's not going to happen. And we raised money, we had barbecues, we had auctions, we had all kinds of things. We raised $70,000, break it open the first year, change the exhibits, freshen it up, and it has run so well, the state would probably like to have it back, but we're not giving it back. So I understand, and if anybody wants to call me and ask how we did it, I'd be more than glad to give what I know and point them in the direction of the people that helped get that done here in Yuma.
I think Yuma is one of those unacknowledged local city-based juggernauts that have more and more taken over both the fiscal and the physical responsibility for any number of these historic properties. It is a model, and the other thing is Bruce Gwynn is wonderful to work with. Smart, he's practical, and if you need to reach out to get some ideas, he's the guy to do it. I want to recognize Eileen Gannon because of her comments, and I want to acknowledge her comments about Nikki Lober, who is the on-site ranger for Reardon, we understand that she is a valued employee. And one of the things we worry about and have tried very hard to protect is her own job and keeping her employed, et cetera. We understand her expertise and the role she plays. And one of the things we worry about is employment. So currently, she's protected as an employee at Pioneer. From my perspective, here is an individual who is directly affected by decisions and moving forward, and I'm very aware of that. And so that needs to be said flat out. All right. Anything else you want to add to that, Eileen?
No, but thank you for acknowledging that. Because Nikki knows every nook and cranny of that house and all its issues and has been nothing short of excellent in taking care of it.
We would agree. Is there anything Bob Roshai from Parks wants to say or add to the discussion generally? No?
Okay, Linda, we do have a number of individuals who are lined up in the auditorium to speak.
Okay, let's recognize those people and have them step forward.
Robert will I think have them lined up and ready to give them the mic.
And make sure they have a mic or something because the audio keeps cutting out.
Okay, just a second.
All right, thank you. My name is Gwen Groff. I am one of the founding members of the Reardon Action Network and volunteer tour guide at Reardon Action. RAN is a group of people that came together in great numbers in 2010 to keep Reardon Action open to the public. Because of its mission to support history in Northern Arizona, the Pioneers Historical Society took the Reardon Action Network, or RAN, under its fiscal umbrella. So funds can be restricted to support just Reardon Mansion. We have found that the passion for local history has no barriers. Together, we are a very large group. The Northern Arizona Pioneers Historical Society has roots dating back to 1904 and will continue to have a presence in Flagstaff to support local history. This includes, but is not limited to, the support of Reardon Mansion through RAM, Pioneer Museum, and other worthy projects of historic value. There is great support for keeping Reardon Mansion open and a large network of people that will work towards that regardless of the outcome today. Upon reading agendas and committee minutes and listening today, it is clear that AHS staff is urging the Board of Directors to vote to discontinue operations of Reardon Mansion. Too bad for AHS, losing the feather in its cap with 35% of the annual pre-COVID visitation. One thing is for certain, the Reardon partnership has left Pioneer and AHS in a better place. Since the partnership began, Pioneer's visitor numbers have increased through the Congo Pass and have served as a great way to promote membership at AHS to 25,000 people a year. The replication of the State Parks Volunteer Manual by a temporary employee will long assist AHS in volunteer management. RAM supported an AmeriCorps position for educational programming at Reardon Mansion directly following the transfer of operations in 2010. That position grew, incorporated Pioneer, and eventually became a full-time AHS position. For all of this, and on behalf of everyone who is so proud of Reardon Mansion, we say you are welcome. I have no doubt that AHS is experiencing a financial crisis. I have no doubt that Reardon is expensive when 2,000 visitors a month are turned away. We are all very aware of this. But we were not aware of the severity until the topic turned up in the AHS meeting agendas. There was absolutely no discussion. There was no invitation to the partners to come to the table and look at alternatives. For the record, there is a gross error in the minutes and agendas that needs to be corrected. It is clearly not possible for Riverview to be costing AHS $17,000 a month, and I know it was mentioned today that it's $8,000. One document says that $17,000 is the current number. How can that even be? Utilities aren't that much, and leadership holds staff away from that site, leaving it vulnerable to vandalism and theft. Even when one employee was working out of the office there, it could not amount to $17,000 a month, or even that $8,000, maybe. So please explain that. Beyond this vote, whether you just continue operating Riverview Mansion or not, you have to work on rebuilding your relationships. The lack of communication surrounding the dissolution of the operating agreement and the blatant misrepresentation of facts has deeply damaged partnerships. I have worked in the nonprofit sector my entire career, and never have I ever seen such disregard and lack of respect for friends groups, volunteers, and board members. It wasn't always this way. In Flagstaff especially, we had an incredible team with great community reach, and it was felt throughout the entire AHS system. Since 2018, there has been no sense of collaboration or partnership, and the transparency has disappeared. What was once a great team effort suddenly feels like us versus them. It makes no sense. When you have a network of people with skills, knowledge, passion, and willingness, you don't turn your shoulder on them, you embrace them. And you still have Pioneer Museum in Flagstaff and a great group of people supporting it. Please mend those relationships. Volunteers, board members, and friends groups serve many purposes. We are the connection to the community and can attract visitors and donors. In fact, each one of us is a potential legacy donor. It is a known fact that people who are active as volunteers frequently leave a blank gift to that organization as long as they're treated properly. We will continue to have a passion for our history and our communications with our communities, but we will have to wait and see if our passion is renewed for AHS. Thank you.
So this is for Kim or Bill or James. We have had disagreements about the numbers in the past. Is this something that you want to address now or address later?
I already added a comment in the chat, so I can. Linda, Gwen is correct that there is a discrepancy not so much in the numbers, but in the wording related to those numbers. So in fact, the $17,000 a month that was cited at the August board meeting, and Kim, Bill, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, the $17,000 was the fully loaded monthly cost for running Riordan. That's when it was open and when it was fully staffed. The reduced figure that you're seeing, and I'm not sure where that was, if it was in something that Jim submitted, the $8,000 that was cited, that is the cost with Riordan completely shut down, except for the utilities, plus with all but one staff member not there, not because they were let go, but because of attrition.
So the number issue, again, has to do with how they're reported and audited and the requirements by the state. I'm just assuming RAN, NAPS, others have their own audits, but that is for another discussion offline. And also noted our relationship. And I think that extends beyond Riordan and not solely based on Riordan. So that is where we stand currently. And do we have any additions? I see Tom has a very a lengthy chat. Does he want to read it or let it stand as is, which will become a matter of the record?
I was wishing to speak as well.
So go ahead.
Okay. I I would like to address a comment that was just made by James that $17,000 is what it costs to run Reardon fully loaded. And that's probably true, but you're not taking into account the revenue that Reardon does generate. We have about 25,000 visitors a year at, let's say, an average of $10 a pop. You know, it did not cost AHS $17,000 a year to run that. But I'll go on with my comments. Yes. My name is Charlotte Madden, and I'm the president of NAPS, and a member of AHS, and a member of RAN, the Ridden Action Network. I'm also a 10-year volunteer docent at Reardon Mansion and a native Arizonan. I've lived in Flagstaff for 53 years. A retired high school history teacher. Today I wish to address the board regarding AHS policies and actions with regard to Reardon Mansion. Seen that AHS is on track to return the operations to State Park. I fully understand how this pandemic has wreaked havoc with the AHS budget. All public venues are experiencing the same thing. What concerns me is the way the AHS staff has handled its partnerships with State Park, the City of Tucson, and Wells Fargo. Never were those entities invited to the table to discuss the situation and work collaboratively to come up with a viable plan for when the pandemic ends. When AHS staff decided to sever those partnerships, they did not notify their partners of their intentions, contrary and evidently from the remarks today that there was something sent out in July. But President Whitaker did remark at the August board meeting that the partners were notified. However, they didn't know prior to the posting of the executive committee meetings calling for a vote of the board to drop the MOUs. And it was RAND that called State Parks administration. We let them know that this is an August agenda item. They were totally blindsided. They had no idea, as there was no previous indication that it was just coming up and being voted on. I understand that the same scenario happened in Tucson. And let's face it, Reardon's an old house, and it is expensive to maintain and operate. During the pandemic, I really question this $8,000 as well. With only one employee there, the place is shut down in the summer months, so utilities can't be that much. We only have that one full-time staff member, and then recently that staff member was removed from Reardon Mansion and put in Pioneer. That left Reardon open to vandalism and all kinds of terrible things that could happen. And the Reardon family, and Ann Gannon, who spoke to you earlier, she's a great-granddaughter of the Reardon family, they were so concerned about the lack of security that they were willing to pay to have security on the property. Again, AHS did not let State Parks know that Reardon Mansion was open. And it was RAN again that called State Parks and let them know. Since they've installed more exterior lighting, cameras, other safety features. I really wonder about the sunset review when this feather in your cap is being taken away. We account for about 25,000 visitors a year, which is 35% of the whole AHS system. And those visitors become members, and they become volunteers, and they can become legacy donors again. So I've been warned I've got to shut up, and so I will. But whatever happens with the vote today, I want you guys to know that Reardon Mansion is going to be just fine.
Any comments from, any further comments from board members? Any other comments from the auditorium?
Yeah, I have more comments from the board.
This is Boy Boy. I have a letter that I was requested to read to you. I can do it now because it's from someone that, other than a board member. Or I can wait until we have the discussion, whichever you'd like me to do.
We are discussing this now. It could be timely. You can go ahead and read it if you want to. But also, we would like a copy of that, please.
I became a member of the Arizona Historical Society out of the thankfulness for the rescue of the Reardon Mansion Historical Park. I had the feeling then that there was a deep understanding of the value of the story of the pioneers of Flagstaff and the importance of preserving a mansion that is unique in this world. As I know, having traveled like many far and wide, this is the reason I've chosen for more than 10 years to volunteer my time at Reardon Mansion. In fact, I frequently, on my tours, have praised the Arizona Historical Society for the way they have saved the mansion, and I know there were some folks who became members of AHS due to the good work that was so evident here in Flagstaff. However, I have been intensely disappointed at the recent uncaring attitude of AHS towards historical treasures in northern Arizona, the Reardon Mansion in particular. There has been a very dismissive attitude and a lack of creativity regarding the survival of this precious relic. As an example of the opposite attitude, unlike ASH, Lowell Observatory has come up with creative ways to manage to remain open. And the Museum of Northern Arizona has been managed to remain open. And now, AHS is actually talking about letting Reardon Mansion go completely without ever having given it a chance to figure out our events that might keep it afloat. For shame. My reaction is that if ASH is so careless of Reardon Mansion, I will be equally careless of AHS and will not renew my own membership in AHS. And I will encourage others to drop that membership as well. I sincerely hope that Reardon Mansion continues to be open to the public with or without the AHS. My support will go to the agency that operates the historic home. Sincerely, Dr. Maggie White. Thank you.
Thank you for reading that. I think we might have gotten that also through the mail or through email. It sounds familiar.
Linda, we do have the content of that letter via email. We'll be certain that it gets entered into the official minutes.
Okay.
Tom Foster, excuse me, has requested to speak.
Tom?
Yeah, thank you, Linda. I just wanted to make a short comment here. I continue to hear some of the people that are involved with Reardon and, of course, Tucson entities, and they continue to talk about no communication. You know, I've sat in meetings, and unless I dreamt this, I've listened to reports, and AHS made repeated efforts with City of Tucson and these other entities. You know, please talk to us. And my reports, what I've listened to, is that there was no comment. Now, communication is key. Now, I understand things get lost in the mail, especially email. Phone calls don't get returned. I know as a small museum in Gila County, I have the same issue. People don't return phone calls. And so, you know, I listened to AHS getting beat up, and you know, there's a lot going on here now. You know, existence may be futile if we don't do the things we need to do. I don't like the what we're left with here in the way of having to make these decisions, especially with Reardon. I love Reardon. I've toured Reardon in the past. I know people that work there. But this whole idea of lack of communication escapes my reality. How did we made the attempts. I've listened to these reports, dates, times, people that were contacted. No response. So you can't force people to talk to you. But I'm bewildered by this whole, no one ever contacted us. We didn't know. And, you know, again, communication is key. And so if there was a hint of this in the wind for any of these agencies, why didn't they contact AHS? Why didn't they say, here we are. What can we do? How can we make this better? How can we survive together as an entity? And right now, that's what we're faced with, is surviving together as an entity. And without communication, it's impossible. So anyway, that's all I wanted to add. And thanks for allowing me to speak.
Thank you, Tom. I appreciate it.
This is Janice Bryson. I'd like to say something. I know many of us at our last board meeting, we all love Reardon and the Tucson facility, and the reason we asked for it to be tabled so that the cities and people involved could come forward and try to work something out, and it sounds like, you know, nobody's made that effort to do that. And it's hard for me. My children's great-grandmother was a maid at Reardon Home, so she could earn money, and she graduated with a lifetime teaching certificate from what NAU originally was. And so, you know, I have family connections on my husband's side all over Flagstaff, and the late Rita Gannon was a good friend of mine, and it's very hard, but I just don't know who actually has come forward in Flagstaff, and I guess maybe we'd like to hear it. Actually, to Tom's point, which I see him waiting to be next, you know, I don't know if they've come forward and tried to work with us.
Can I step in here? James, can I step in?
Sure.
Bob has been part of the Zoom, and I would like to see his response to these pleas. It should have come no surprise. There was no blindsiding part. And the warnings were already there when we renewed the MOU for only 6 months. And this is a very hard issue for any director of an agency to handle. This is a political hot potato currently in Flagstaff. So members of the city council, the city manager, and others, they're not returning calls, and they're probably holding their breath till after the election. But you can't have meaningful conversations with yourself, and these are critical entities to come to the table. City of Tucson, over time, has been far more responsive. They have eventually returned phone calls, and I think they're actively talking with local groups about certainly keeping about Fort Lowell open. So if Bob is there, I'm really asking him to comment or to counter our experience.
This is Boyd Coy. You know, I have a real concern is in management, whenever there's a change agent, the responsibility of communicating is the change agent, not the recipients of the change. We had a presentation last week, last board meeting,
from Tucson with similar complaints. We have this tape. We're listening to complaints from Flagstaff. It may be both parties' problem to not communicate, but the effort has to come from who's ever making the change. And I have a real concern because the people that are upset are the people that the board represents and who really are the owners of all these facilities. The staff is responsible for implementing it, but they're not owned by the staff. They're owned by the citizens, and we're making citizens upset. In more than one area of the state, I think we need to take a real serious look at it. Thank you.
Anybody else have something to add here before we put this to a vote? And I'm going to remind everyone it will be a voice vote. We'll vote on three separately. Go ahead. I can't hear you.
He would respond to your request.
You
Now, Chair, Director, do you hear me?
Yes, Bob.
Okay, good to hear from you. I wasn't planning on speaking until the Chair wanted to hear from me. I can go through this timeline as quickly as I can based off on memory, but as we were notified, we had entered, let me back up to the original agreement I mentioned in my comments previously, that when we entered into an extension agreement with the Historical Society in June, I think it was a 6-month negotiating period for a new agreement for the management of Reardon Mansion. It was in July that we were notified of the potential agenda item to dissolve the agreement because we received a copy from the Reardon Action Network that this was going to be on the executive committee's discussion to terminate that agreement. So that, and to my knowledge, myself or none of my staff were aware that the board was considering this action until that came up. Then I've had a few discussions with the director on what was going on, as well as others, and then here we are from when it was tabled at the last meeting to where we are now. So I just want to make that clear for the record that was the level of communication that we received prior to your discussion at your previous board meeting when it came to dissolving the agreement with Redemption. Thank you.
Bill or James, what is your understanding of that MOU?
Linda, I unfortunately couldn't hear any of it. The connection at the Heritage Center is unstable. Bill, did you hear it?
Yes, I heard what the director what he said, and I think there's some truth in what he said. Now, for sure, from his perspective, it's 100% accurate. I would just offer that that I don't know when they received a information from Reardon Action Network, but I do know that I have been putting in calls to the director's office to inform them of the possibility of this type of action before the meeting, and then when we finally got a chance to sync up calendars and agendas, we were able to have a conversation with he and his staff and our director, Director Burns, and myself. And since that time, you know, I know that I've put in several calls to their operations team about the issue. So we have tried to continue to be in conversations with the state parks about it throughout up until even this past week.
So, Roy brought up an important point about who's responsible for communication. First and foremost, the responsibility lies with the board. Either board directs the staff to do something, or we take it upon ourselves to do something. And I will own all that. The thing is, from my perspective, so what is the difference, actually, between now and a year ago? These same issues were sitting there. They are not new. The MOU's issues were sitting there. They are not new. They are recurrent. The only difference is, we didn't sweep it under the carpet. We didn't try to kick the can down the road. The difference is that we have moved it forward for discussion, for airing, etc. We can't afford not to act at the board. And that is the difference. The issues are not. The difference is we're moving it forward. I don't think we were taken seriously. I think that given our record as a board, it would be, we're going to just be afraid to act, reluctant to act. And we are compelled to do something about this. There are any number of unresolved issues that hurt us. Can we come through this unscathed? I don't think so. I think there will be consequences. But right now, due diligence for me as president and due diligence for this board is my first due diligence is with the board. With the board who represents taxpayers and appointed by the governor. And my due diligence is to bring these forward and to have as comprehensive a discussion as we could. That is my priority. Due diligence with the board, their responsibility, etc. We're doing this, not without a lot of hits, but those kinds of things need to happen before there's a vote, etc. The efforts have been made, and this is where we are currently. So when we talk about due diligence, that is where it lies first. Get the board in order and present the facts, and then move on from there. There may be lots of opportunities to recreate any number of things in the future, but right now we have to act. Any rebuttals to that? Any comments, et cetera?
Linda, Kelly Corsett has a question.
Kelly?
Hello, Linda. Thank you. I just have a question. This is, I think, for James or possibly for Bill Ponder. If the board does decide to authorize terminating the MOUs, what happens next? Is there any opportunity for other groups? It looks like they're just looking at the chat. There may be some groups in various talks at these various facilities. But is there opportunity for those conversations to continue, or does that door close?
I think that there's certainly that opportunity to continue, and it is part of doing due diligence for us to continue to foster that dialogue, Kelly. I appreciate you asking. We have been contacted by at least three different groups in the Tucson area about both the Downtown History Museum and Historic Fort Lowell. And I think one of them actually, it may actually be a viable new partnership for the city of Tucson. We have put them in touch with the folks that they need to talk to with the city, because again, this is where our hands are tied. We have no negotiating authority as because we don't own these properties. So we've made sure that those folks are in touch with the city. I think the greatest opportunity lies with Fort Lowell, and we certainly will be a willing partner in considering a loan of objects that would continue to make that site viable. Wells Fargo, all bets are off, honestly, Kelly. I just learned before walking into this meeting that Wells Fargo has vacated the entire rest of that building. We don't know what their intent is for it at this time. And then in Flagstaff, certainly I would hope that the local groups that are so very passionate about the mansion would be able to work out a situation similar to what the very successful partnership is in Yuma between parks and the local community, which allows for some local control over the site.
Thank you.
Parks is a key partner, absolute key partner. And they're not in great financial shape either, but they own the property, and therefore I think a lot of the onus is on them to sit down with the local constituencies for the continuation of that. One communication I received is that the person or persons didn't care who ran it day to day as long as it was run. Period. So go ahead, John.
Kelly?
Yes. Could we get a response really as to what some of the specifics we've heard back from the city of Tucson regarding the Fort Lowell Museum?
Yeah, I can take that, John. I've had a conversation with the deputy city manager, the city manager, and the Councilman Paul Cunningham's office as chief of staff of the Fort Lowell Park is in his ward. Excuse me. And they basically understood exactly what the concerns were, what the issues were. But they had not said anything about any type of actions that they would take. And so while we've talked to them or informed them and have looked for some type of feedback, they haven't offered any. And as opposed to some of the neighborhood groups or interested parties who have said they would like to try to step up and engage and keep the facility active. And those are the ones that we've instructed on how to contact, you know, the representatives within the city and how to potentially look at making proposals to them.
So I suppose my question is, if we elect not to terminate that MOU, can we do it in such a way as we give them or give the city of Tucson a period of time to pull things together?
Well, if that's me, then to this point, they've been silent. The city is not indicated they're interested in pulling anything together. The effort has been on our part, and as I said, they've been non-responsive in this, and this is over 2 months now.
Longer. The other thing that is understandable but disappointing is there have been no return on communication with Flagstaff, city manager, or any of the elected officials that have been contacted. Just silence.
This is Boy Coy again. I'm the one that tabled, made the motion to table, because I thought we needed time for the staff and the, because there's so many people upset about this. What did the staff do between the time of the motion, the table, and today's meeting to try to resolve any of these with Reardon?
Well, as I mentioned, Boyd, I've had a number of phone conversations with the state parks the operations area, and I know that they have continually told me that they are looking for alternatives, but to this point, at least from what I can tell, they haven't come up with any. And so I'm the one who initiated the phone calls. They haven't, even after my initial phone call, they never called me back. I would just call them again.
The Parks and Recreation?
Yes.
Okay. Let me make one more statement, and I'll tell you what. I'm going to answer Kelly's question, too, relative to Reardon. After there was tabled, Tom Rose and Judge Barbarino and I was invited to a meeting with the people in Flagstaff. Their problem was not being dissolving it with the management with AHS. It was the way it was being done, not what was being done. And when it's time to make a motion, I'm going to make a motion in behalf of Reardon because we're going to vote on it separately. To vote yes on dissolving it because they have no issue with not being with the Arizona Historical Society. That's one of the things I'm having the biggest problem with, is for anyone that we've been dealing with not to want to continue to work with us. And I think we need to look at the reason why. Thank you. If you're ready for a motion, I'll make a motion right now.
We're going to do this MOU by MOU. And the first one is we need a motion to terminate the MOU with the Downtown History Museum with the City of Tucson. That is the first motion we need. Need a motion? Need a second?
Linda, this is Tom Rose. I have an invitation.
I can't hear you, Tom.
Is it on?
I can hear you better. Go ahead.
Okay. The only thing I was going to let you hear is, okay, just to clarify my mind, is AHS doesn't have enough money to operate these three functions, continue operating these MOUs, or the January Snitch. The issue is, are we going to dissolve them now and let each individual have a chance to keep these places open? And what will we be doing to assist them in transfer? Boy said, I was party to the meeting at Flagstaff. Reardon and the Reardon Action Network and MAPS have no problem with the dissolution. So therefore, I will make the motion that's requested here that we dissolve the
just a minute. I didn't hear the last part. We're talking about Downtown History Museum. We're voting all of these separately. Did I hear that you have a motion on the floor to say yes to that termination?
The motion was yes to the termination of the MOU regarding Reardon Mansion.
But it will come to Reardon. We haven't come there yet, okay? We'll get there, all right? We'll get there. So just hold that for a moment. So we're doing this by A, by B, by C.
Linda?
Yes?
I wonder if you could share what the timeline for the dissolution is. How long would these organizations have to renegotiate?
That is up to staff, and that is up to the entities. They are expecting to receive an official notification from us that we want to terminate. The timeline of that is up to the, largely up to the landowners, with, or the landlords, with the exception of Reardon, which has a 30-day exit clause built into the MOU. And we're going to make the most of that. But having said that, we've already received, they call it a transition plan, but it is actually a checklist that you would send to a renter in terms of, you know, what is the status of the property, what do you have in there, and so forth. And we have, through Nikki, have already responded to that. So Parks is expecting to hear from us because we already got a copy of their checklist of things they want us to go through. And have gone through that checklist, and they should have had all the responses to that. So that is that. There's some details regarding Tucson, we're going to exit for the 30-day termination clause. That doesn't mean the conversation won't stop. It means that effective then, we are going to stop paying our rent.
This is Jim Snitzer. I move that we terminate the MOU regarding Downtown History Museum with the City of Tucson.
Okay,
I second.
Okay, I'm going to call the vote. This will be a roll call vote. Nobody can hide on this. Okay, let's go ahead and start this, James.
Yes, same order, alphabetical. Robert Ballard.
Yes.
Denise Bauer.
Yes.
Lorna Brooks.
Yes.
Janice Bryson.
Yes.
Colleen Byron.
Yes.
Kelly Corsett.
Yes.
Voy Coy.
Yes.
Tom Foster.
Yes.
Bruce Gwynn. Bruce
yes.
Gwynn?
Yes.
Okay. Yes, Bruce. Sharon Holmbach.
Yes.
John Lacey.
Yes.
Tom Rose.
Yes.
Greg Scott.
Yes.
Jim Snitzer.
Yes.
Michael Wade.
Yes.
Linda Whitaker.
Yes.
President Whitaker, that vote is unanimous, yes.
Okay. Let's move on to the second one. The second MOU is terminating our agreement with the Fort Lowell Museum, the details of which should be worked out with staff. So it is, I'm looking for a motion to, yes.
Linda, this is Jim Schuster. I move that we terminate the MOU regarding Fort Lowell Museum at Fort Lowell Park with the City of Tucson.
Just Tom Rose seconding.
Thank you. Let's have a roll call vote.
Same order, Robert Ballard.
Yes.
Denise Bauer.
Yes.
Lorna Brooks.
Yes.
Janice Bryson.
Yes.
Colleen Byron.
Yes.
Kelly Corsett.
Yes.
Voy Coy.
Yes.
Tom Foster.
Yes.
Bruce Gwynn.
Yes.
Sharon Holmbach.
Yes.
John Lacey.
No.
Julie noted, no. Tom Rose.
Yes.
Greg Scott.
Yes.
Jim Snitzer.
Yes.
Michael Wade.
Yes.
Linda Whitaker.
Yes.
Okay, that passes 15 yes, 1 no, Linda.
Thank you. And the last is to terminate the rental agreement, the agreement that we have with Parks regarding Reardon Mansion.
Go ahead.
I can't hear you.
I so moved that we did terminate with Reardon Mansion the MOU of State Parks.
And who is it? Is this Boy?
It's Tom Rose, Linda.
Tom Rose. Okay, Tom, I need a second.
Roy, 20 seconds.
Okay. So, roll call voice, voice vote on this issue.
Okay. Robert Ballard.
Yes.
Denise Bauer.
Yes.
Lorna Brooks.
Yes.
Janice Bryson.
Yes.
Colleen Byron.
Yes.
Kelly Corsett.
Yes.
Boy Coy.
Boy.
That's a yes.
Yes, yes.
Yes. Tom Foster.
Yes.
Bruce Gwynn.
Yes.
That's a yes. Okay. Sharon Holmback.
Yes.
John Lacey.
Yes.
Tom Rose.
Yes.
Greg Scott.
Yes.
Jim Snitzer.
Yes.
Michael Wade.
Yes.
Linda Whitaker.
Yes.
Linda, that one passes unanimously.
And not easily, and not without our own degree of loss or sadness. Not an easy vote, but we have to look at the data and respond accordingly, and that's where we have it. This will be followed up, I understand, James, with like a certified letter notifying those entities, et cetera.
Yes. Yes, ma'am, we will.
Okay. All right. We're going to go on to committee reports. And I understand that Tom Rose does have a properties and building committee report and has submitted it. Would you like to speak to that?
This is Tom Rose talking on the building and properties committee report. You've given a complete list of the current properties actions going on from receiving Eric Gonzalez. I just want to comment on the recent meeting of the building committee meeting that we had actually last week. And welcoming Sharon and Denise, look forward to working with them and having their input on the way we manage our buildings. The gist of the meeting that we had was basically an orientation as to what all of the 14 different properties that they suggested them responsible for upkeep on, and the financial requirements of these buildings. So we think that we have made a good move with the MOUs because of the impact of several of these buildings have been putting on the finances for AHS. There were no actions taken at our last or our first and last buildings in the property committee meeting, other than just to look into the magnitude of requirements. The only additions that I can make are to some of the northern division improvements which are on your list. We received a go-ahead from ADOA to continue with the work at the barn in Pioneer Museum. All of the roughing electricals has been approved, so we can put it the ongoing maintenance of the plant at the ribbon region is still one of the things that we are doing with all materials in rebuilding some of the access points. Anyone have any other questions? I believe you feel free to ask them on the condition of any of the buildings.
So, are we moving on to the next? Hearing no questions or comments, do we move on to the next community outreach? Is that what Janice is doing now?
Yes, I'm leaving the microphone. For our three new board members, every year we get grants for $1,000 to $2,000 to our certified museums, which are supposed to be used for preservation of their archives and collections, as well as exhibits. And this year we have 36 requests for $61,934. And since we only have $35,000 to give, we had to really work hard on that. Some were for building repairs and carpeting, et cetera, so they were not granted. Unfortunately, this year when the minutes went out from our committee, they didn't include the list of the museum names and what we gave them. I do have it if you have any questions. And I'm sure you can just contact the Heritage Center here and they can send you the list if you'd like to. Our committee recommends of the awarding of 29 grants in the amount of $35,434.82.
And that's a recommendation to accept your report and your decision?
Yes.
Okay. So we don't need a second, apparently. Can we have a voice vote? I think in this case a voice vote will be sufficient to accept how that grant money was used and dispersed. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Any objections? Then hearing none, Janice, you proceed as you need. I have a question related to certified and affiliated, and maybe for David Turpey. Tell me what appears on that last page of the journal. Do we have a complete list there so that the right people, the right organizations are listed?
I can feel that, Linda, because I know that Tawn is down in the auditorium. So David and I took a look at that just the other day. I don't have a copy of the journal in my hands right now. I did note that was missing is in the transition between the affiliates to institutional memberships, there were a couple of institutions that didn't get listed. So I've asked David to make sure that in the issue that's going to print right now, that it will list institutional members as well as our certified historical.
I think that's important, and would you please take it one step further? Because I know some, we had one entity say, whoops, you overlooked us, but please, for those that were overlooked, just send them a note saying that we will correct this. Send an official communication that we will fix it.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. All right, let's go. Anything, Greg Scott there, lounging around in his bed, regarding the collections, library archives, and so forth?
We've not had a meeting. As soon as I think it's been put on the back burner, mainly because we have a lot of other issues, but I expect by the next meeting, or certainly the one after that, I'll get together with James and the staff, and we'll be having a meeting directly.
Sounds good. We need to put that back on one of the front burners.
Absolutely.
And then publications committee report. John, anything to add there? Any comments, et cetera?
The publications committee has not met, but David, could you just give us a brief statement of what we have in the pipeline?
The only potential book publication is yours, John. I rejected a few other proposals that I didn't think were a good fit. And the other thing I would just add briefly is that I've been in communication with the director and editor-in-chief at the University of Arizona Press about potential collaboration with them in terms of book publishing moving forward, because they have the staff and the resources I think that we are lacking in our publications division. So I have not heard anything formal from them about my proposal, but I will certainly let everyone know as soon as I do.
So thank you, and I think that I would add to David's comment that there is a conflict of interest prohibition in our bylaws, and so my book proposal has been made to the society with no compensation to me.
So you don't personally benefit, is that it?
That's correct.
And the proceeds go to?
It will go back into the publications pot.
It sounds wonderful. That sounds like win-win. Okay, I don't think we have any more committee reports listed. Is that true? Is that correct, James?
That's correct, Linda.
Okay. Then I don't think we have any further business. Is that correct?
Announcements.
Anybody have any announcements for the good of the order? Anything people want to talk about there?
Actually, I do have an announcement. This will be my last meeting. My term is over. I felt that the 30 years is more than enough. I've certainly enjoyed all this. I will consent to remain on the publications committee, it's been a real pleasure to serve on the board.
Does that mean you're available for curbside consults?
Of course.
Okay. Good to know. It's a real loss, but I like the idea that you're sticking to something that you feel passionate about, and that is your intellectual contributions and interests in publications. I think that's important. I think also you can help us with relationships with the U of A.
Happy to do it.
All right. Thank you so much for your service, John Lacey. 30 years sounds like more than a life sentence, but there you go. The rest of us will carry on, not as well without you, I don't think. I think it's a real loss. Anything else, you guys? Should we sign off? Are we done? I'm going to call this meeting adjourned. Thank you very much for attending. Thank you very much for your participation. And are you waving goodbye, Robert, or do you want to say something? Just waving goodbye. Okay.
Yeah, just goodbye.
All right. Goodbye to you all. Our next meeting is January 8th. Starts off the new year. And you're going to see chapters 1107 Fund on that for discussion. For probably months to come, but we're also going to have the AG's office come and talk to us specifically and open it up to the meeting to questions and answers from the board. So on that cheerful note, thank you all, and I will sign off.
Thank you.
Thanks, Linda. Thanks,
guys.
Thank you.